Josh.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lur.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lur.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lur.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lur.
Do the wiggle, man. I do the wiggle, man.
Yeah, that is right. And as Ethan Zahn said,
it's good to be back.
It's good to be back here in the Wiggle Room with the man who brings us all here together. Give it up for the great Mr. Josh Wiggler.
Oh my God. I like to imagine there's like a little like secret somebody in that voting booth who was playing like a little flute note underneath Ethan's "It's Good to Be Back." If you play that again, you'll hear that. Yeah, who is that? Who is that? Is that DJ LaBelle Klein in there? Who is that?
Yeah.
Who's doing
Might
that?
Might be Coach. Oh. Maybe it's Coach.
If you out there, dear listener, are listening to this and you have not yet watched Coach's cameo Valentine to Rob and Nicole, please God, do it.
Yeah.
Please do it. We don't need to spend any time on it because I know you already litigated it on Twist.
Yeah, we talked about it on This Week in Survivor.
My. No, yeah. I'm so excited to be here. It's the return of Rob and Josh's Fist Bump podcast here with the Wiggle Room. So this is exciting. It's great to be back. And if this is jarring that suddenly I am back in your podcast feed, then you missed out on the preseason Wiggle Room in which we announced our return. There's a podcast where we covered that part. So if the tone shift is very sudden from the end of the last Wiggle Room and the start of this, the first official Wiggle Room, there's a whole podcast that goes into like a 2-hour
thing
that you can listen to. Yes.
But that being said, that we are back to talk about the premiere of Survivor Winners at War, and we will wand off in a little bit later on in this show, but also that this is not only the final season of the Wand Off, this is the final season of the Wiggle Room, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what future the Wiggle Room has beyond Survivor. There may be reasons to Wiggle Room at some point in time, but I do think that I'm excited for this to be the last hurrah in terms of guaranteed weekly Survivor podcast.
Yes.
So I think as far as Josh Wiggler podcasts about every single Survivor episode every week, this is the last season we're going to do that. And I'm very pumped up because it seems like we're going to go out on a high.
Yes.
It seems like we're going to go out on a very fun note.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I really treasure about this is that I do think that it ending also gives it meaning. And I think also makes it important, and it makes it very exciting to be here with you for one last season of the Wiggle Room and the Wand Off here in season 40. And I couldn't be more excited to get into all of this here with you to talk about Survivor Winners at War.
No, 100%. And there's something that I'm, it's hard for me to put into words, which is a problem, Robert, as we are slinging words into microphones and through the microphones into people's ears. That's the purpose of our contributions here, that it's difficult, that I'm having a difficult time putting into words just how meaningful this most recent Wednesday night was for me. Obviously it was a tremendous celebration, of the Survivor franchise, but of your franchise specifically, of Rob Has a Podcast, with the 10-year anniversary party that you held on Wednesday, which sounded like a delight. Sounded like you guys had fun.
It was a wild night. It was a wild night.
My Wednesday night was very different. My Wednesday night was myself plus one friend who lives a few blocks away, not even very close by in my neighborhood, who enjoys Survivor and is very, very casual. Does not listen to Survivor podcasts, so curiously listened to all the first one out. I think just doing his friend solid. And he's like a mega casual when it comes to Survivor. So that was like my experience. It was myself and a mega casual watching on Wednesday night, and the shrieks of joy that rung out through this Wiggle Room, the actual physical literal Wiggle Room. I would say you can't even imagine, but when we do the Wand Off, you hear them. So you probably can't imagine what it sounded like as I was shrieking euphoric shrieks of joy. But I felt something as a Survivor fan that I cannot even tell you the last time I felt as a Survivor fan. I've been very privileged that over the years I've gotten to have a closer look at the show, at the franchise, how the sausage gets made. It has been a double-edged sword at times. But one of the things that has been a challenge about it is sort of like this unique view of the show that you don't really share the same way with so many other people. And watching the premiere on Wednesday night really felt like I was out there in the crowd, like watching a virtuoso performance. Like I felt like I was out there in the arena, seeing history being made, watching like my family and friends on TV again. It was just, it really did feel like the culmination of 20 years. I was so nervous to watch it. I was really afraid going into it that I was going to have some sort of collapse watching the show. And instead what happened, just like shocked me with how powerful it felt. And that I could feel that way about Survivor again. And so I'm treasuring this too, because I'm not taking it for granted that this is going to be the case all the time. But I think a big piece of why it feels that way for me is, and Gordon Holmes talked about this in his great recap over at Xfinity, which if you haven't read his recap of the premiere, I strongly recommend you do, because it's got some really fun behind the scenes tidbits about what he and Dalton and everybody saw when they went out on location. But Gordon compared this season to sort of like the Avengers Endgame of Survivor.
Yeah.
This feeling that like Captain America and Iron Man are assembling one last time, and some of these other Marvel heroes, even though we know that the franchise is going to go on and there's going to be more blindsides and everything, like it does feel like this is the end of the Boston Rob era, whatever that means. This is the end of, you know, so many key arcs. And it really did feel that way. It felt like this culmination of, for many people, myself included, 20 years of being, you know, alive and in close concert with this show that to so many people raises so many eyebrows when you tell them what it means to you. But we get it. We're here. You know, we get it. And I felt that. And like all of the issues that I've had, some of the issues that I continue to have, they did like just sort of like drift into the background as I was just letting myself get washed in how joyful of an experience it was. So I'm really excited to, as best as humanly possible, and my fingers are frickin' crossed here, maintain that level of enthusiasm here on the podcast and throughout the final season of the Wiggle Room and the Wand Off, because it's not going to be the last time you'll ever hear me talk about Survivor, I'm sure, but I need to get to a healthy place with it. And where I feel with it this week coming into this podcast is like, I feel rejuvenated, but I want you to get that version of me. And then I think I need to go off on new adventures and just enjoy whatever evolution of RHAP comes next, which I'm very, very excited for.
Okay, so we're here with casual super fan Josh Wiggler.
yes, which is what I described myself as on the great Shannon Gus's International Survivor podcast this past week, talking about Australian Survivor All-Stars. I am a casual super fan, retired press, ex-press. I'm not professionally covering the show anymore. It's a big old hobby Survivor once again for me, and it's a glorious thing. Just so happens that my microphone may be a little louder than some of yours out there, but it's just a joy. It's just a hobby for me. And I am excited for anyone who wants to listen along with the hobby for the next several weeks. Please join us. And if you don't want to listen, you know, all good. You could go to the next, literally 10 podcasts this week.
Yeah, I mean, is the ninth of our Survivor podcasts covering the premiere, not even including your, you know, aforementioned podcast with Shannon Gus or anything that we did with the 10-year anniversary or the coverage before. This is the ninth Survivor podcast since the premiere, covering the two-hour premiere on Rob is a Podcast.
Yeah. So there's a lot to choose from. You can choose from whatever. So if this is not
don't even talk to the people that don't want to
be here.
That's it.
I'm trying to get to a place where I'm not apologizing for much anymore. So that's the thing. And Rob, there's nothing that I love more than podcasting with you. So even if we're not podcasting about Survivor, I'm sure we're going to find something to podcast about. But for now, this is what we're going to podcast about. We're going to podcast about it for the next several weeks. And it is not just like the Avengers Endgame of Survivor, but like, I mean, when we get to Evolution of Strategy Chapter 40, which is a thing we'll do in a couple of years, like it's really, this season is the culmination of so much we've talked about over there too. So it's fun for this. This almost feels like a trial run of that discourse. So the fact that we'll get to talk about this season twice eventually is a tremendous thing.
Okay.
And I'm just, I don't even know where to start because I've got
thoughts about this episode. With the end in mind, where you talked about, you know, the finality of it all. We're talking about the finality of this podcast, the finality of the Wand Off. Here, you know, I wanted to come on and explore that with you. I wasn't expecting you to be coming up with it on your own, but I did want to explore that in terms of it being the end of the line of so many of our heroes. Again, hard to imagine another timeout for Boston Rob. Sandra talked about how in an interview that she had done that she's retired. I am struggling to imagine, you know, another timeout for Parvati. And it does feel like for our classic Survivor heroes, this could be the end of the line. Honestly, there's not too many players in the season where I don't see it as the end of the line. I mean, can you see many players from this season having, you know, another adventure in them on Survivor?
You know, certainly for a few. There's definitely a few that, like, I imagine, like, if Survivor called, they would pick up the phone and very happily return to the beach.
Yes. I would say, to put a better point on that, it's hard for me to imagine another theme where Survivor, you know, is going to bring these players back.
Yeah, for many of them, if not most of them, if not all of them. And I am now just like looking at the names, and this does feel like the final rodeo for basically everybody. Not everybody all the way down the line, but I think, you know, the vast majority of people. And like, maybe, I don't know if this is a hot take. I doubt that it qualifies as a hot take coming from me, given, you know, some of the things I've had to say about Survivor recently. But I almost feel like this should be the last season for a while. Like, how are you going to top Winners at War? Like, how do you top the Winners season? It really is the culmination of so much, that it feels like this is, it's just such a great celebratory way to close the book on Survivor, let it rest for a little while.
Well, that's a future problem.
It is a future problem, but it does just feel to me like, I think for a lot of people, this is going to feel, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see if this is like an invigorating season or if this is like a, man, I'm good. Like, I feel full, but I feel great. It's going to be compelling, but I'm certainly not saying that like this is the end of me watching Survivor. I can't imagine that's the case, but it just does feel like, it feels like the end of some form of the investment feels like it's wrapping up here. So many of the questions that we've had over the years, not all of them, but so many of them are going to be addressed here. What does it look like when Kim Spradlin isn't just playing against the One World numbskulls, but is now Kim Spradlin Wolf out here in an ocean filled with wolves and fellow winners of Survivor? What is she going to look like with her back up against the wall? So far, the answer is, you know, a little scary for the Kim stands. And there's lots of questions like that are being put to the test. Could Boston Rob and Parvati, could they set aside their past? Could they work together? There's just lots of great fan fiction is like unfurling before our eyes here, that it just does feel like all of those Thanos Easter eggs at the end of all the Marvel movies are starting to collide here on the beach.
Mm-hmm. Did you get the sense in terms of the gameplay that players are playing like it's their final rodeo?
I don't know about that. It's that they're playing like it's their final rodeo, but the degree of difficulty is so obviously high. And that was amazing to behold. What was amazing to behold was the extraordinary level of fear that was so thick that it was like oozing out of the TV screen. You know, watching, and I'm sure that there was a bit of like first bootitis. I don't want to be the first one to go. But then it's so pervasive that it's in the second half of the episode for the second tribal council. And they know that they've got this second shot back into the game. It seems like nobody wants to go to the edge of extinction. And I'm not using that as a dig at EOE. Thank you for your service, Rob. I won't bring it up. I think that like that level of, it can't be me. Under no circumstances can it be me, that you saw from like very powerful figures in the Survivor mythos was very sad for them and intoxicatingly compelling for us. There's been a lot of conversation about how scary it was for Kim to be, you know, playing in a mode that she's never had to play before, with her back against the wall, people not wanting to talk to her, that being such a powerful feeling for her that she literally collapses at the feet of Sandra Diaz-Twine in the sand. But the one, and Kim is one of my all-time favorite players, of course, I'm very on the record about that. But the one that like really stood out to me, great friend of the podcast and fellow RHAP co-host Tyson Apostle, to see him in a position of powerlessness and to sort of watch him react to that. There was like a tone shift in his voice. He got like pale as a ghost in that confessional where he's like, I have to concede the battle in order to win the war, and I have to put my fate put my fate into the hands of like these spiny porpoises or whatever. Which was great, but like, and it was such a great Tyson line, but it's delivered with like a gulp in his throat. For us to be talking about a season where the Tyson who played Blood versus Water, one of the best victories in the entire Survivor franchise, that guy is back for round four and he's spooked on day three is really, really powerful. I think that speaks to the degree of difficulty. Maybe you could say for like Boston Rob and Parvati, I do think that there's like a sense of them playing like they're playing with house money and they're playing like for one last shot. But then there's other people who are playing a more, I don't want to say a more calculated game, because I think Rob and Parvati played really well this round. It really was amazing that they weren't even in the discussion for people to go home. But then there are people who you would think of like, who falls under that category of playing with house money. Like nobody comes to mind more quickly than someone like Tony. And the way that Tony was playing was like very, very smart, like A+ level Tony gameplay. Like that is like, if I could have gotten into Tony's ear before he went out for round three, he's playing exactly the way that I'd hope he would play. Like, you're actually a really good, affable, agreeable, fun person. Lean on that and don't lean on the antics as much. And so I think that that's not playing like he's playing for his final time. It's like he's playing to win. You're seeing 20 people who have won the game play to win yet again. And by virtue of that, not everybody's going to be able to win. In fact, some people are going to lose epically and quickly. And so you're getting a lot of panic and pandemonium as a result. And, you know, the result of that was one of the most unsettling, unnerving, and epic episodes of Survivor I've ever seen.
See, I think that I would say, and again, it's easy for me to say this from behind a microphone, but I find that the idea of finality in being out there, of, you know, getting on that plane to Fiji and saying, I am never coming back here again, even if they give me the tickets, I'm not going to go and be one of these people that goes and walks around there after the season is over. I'm never getting back on this plane again. I'm never coming here again. And this is it. I think I would find it freeing, but maybe that is the reason for the tightness of, I'm never going to get another chance at this.
Right. Yeah. Scary. You know, it's a scary concept. I think if you've had a lot of success on Survivor, I think that there is an indication that there's always going to be another chance. Like there's probably, you know, even if you didn't win, but like you're like a super popular player, you're probably going around thinking like, well, when I go back, not if I go back. And I think for many of these people, there probably is that question that's been floating around in their minds for a while. But Survivor's getting old, you know, look no further than the fact that this is a pretty old cast comparatively to other casts. We haven't seen Parvati play in 10 years. She's a very different person than she was back then when she played in Heroes versus Villains. Everybody's changed a lot. Especially Nick, who's changed so much in the 1 year. That was funny on Twist this week. I think you do imagine that there's probably for a lot of people that feeling of maybe this is it. And I think it's obviously not, because they're gonna go film 41 and 42 in like a minute. But like it does just sort of feel like there's a certain part of Survivor that I think that the last year of the show really did test this idea of like what it's like to take Survivor for granted, that this is always just going to be like this stable source of excitement and joy in our lives. And like, maybe not, like, you know, sometimes it'll be here, but maybe it won't be as joyful as you're hoping for, or as stabilizing as you're hoping for. That I think that like there is now like a piece of that is almost more literal. Like I'm looking at Winners at War as not necessarily the grand epilogue of the franchise, but as a road mark of, we are much closer to the end of Survivor than we are to the beginning. I think that you can make the argument that Survivor as a format can live forever. And certainly as a franchise, as an international franchise, there's very exciting things that are happening in Survivor iterations outside of the United States of America. But Jeff Probst is not immortal, even though he looks a lot like Richard Alpert from Lost. You know, there will come a day where he's not going to want to do this anymore. And so that end, I think, is much closer than where we were when we started. And I loved that this episode began in Borneo, even if Hatch is nowhere to be found. And I think that that's a powerful thing that's coursing through the veins of this season, is history is sort of like the big beating heart. And it's not like the hokey history, the here's another Eric Reichenbach dig type of history. Here's his necklace and it's spooky now and it's haunted now. Like, it's not that. This is like living, breathing history that is unfolding on our screens of these people who many of whom you never expected to see again. And most of whom we probably won't see again in this context. So it's powerful, really powerful.
Josh, I wanted to talk to you about Natalie Anderson, who I know is a longtime favorite of yours, that from the real time watching and from going back into the evolution of strategy, and you've always been a huge fan of her game. She ends up being the first one out of this season. What did that mean to you to see Natalie?
You foo. I was sad. But I'd be sad about almost anybody. So that is another reason why, like, this season is crazy. Every week they're coming for your faves. I know not for everybody that's the case. There's certainly some people you could sacrifice early for a certain quadrant of the fandom. But it's going to be a big deal to see any of these people go down early. And I think for Natalie, if she's going to take any comfort in any of this, I don't really think it was her fault. I think it felt to me, was it Worlds Apart that has an episode, Survivor Russian Roulette, I believe, is the Mike Holloway thing with the idol and putting an idol on Shireen. But this, like, actually felt like it to a degree. They were spinning the chamber. Or if you want to make it like a cleaner metaphor that isn't quite as, you know, devastating, it was really musical chairs to a certain extent. Of like, it's whoever's like the one who's unlucky enough to sit down last is going to go home. And like that's what it felt like with the Natalie vote. Felt like the plan was bouncing around to a few different options before it finally landed and settled on Natalie. And that felt, based on how it translated on screen, like a really late decision. Someone was going to get got first. And I don't think that it's, Natalie's. It may have been different depending on who got first and how, but certainly the way that Natalie went home, I don't think that it's any kind of indictment on her skills as a player. I think she could have come back for a season like Game Changers, which she was originally slated to do, and actually have done pretty well on a season like that. I think that Natalie could come back on a future season of Survivor and do really well. And hey, who knows? She may be able to fire token her way back into the game.
She may be able to.
On the board.
Yeah. And I know it's not your favorite thing to talk about with the Edge of Extinction, but something that, just going back to the history of Natalie Anderson, that I had been thinking about, how, you know, the one time she really let her emotions, sort of like get a hold of her. And of course, she was very upset with John Rocker immediately after Nadia got voted out. There's a point in Survivor San Juan del Sur, and I'm not sure if it's at the final five or final six, but we see where Natalie goes to Exile Island and she spends the day by herself there. And that's when like everything hits her. And it seems like that she puts on like a really brave face in front of everybody. And I wonder, you know, just how tough the Edge of Extinction might be on Natalie.
It won't be so tough if she can get a six pack of beer, pizza, some wings. I think it could be tough. I think we probably won't see the full extent of that. Edge of Extinction is here. We're going to talk about it. It's, you know, allegedly going away for a while based on your interview with Jeff Probst. That's great, I think, for me. As far as its placement in this 2-hour episode, because it was a 2-hour episode, it'd be a weird list to make, but let's rank every scene from the Survivor Winners at War premiere. I would probably put the
what is this, Game of Thrones season for you?
Yeah, I know. No, mercifully, I do not have to do anything like that about Survivor ever again.
Every scene from the Winners at War premiere, comma, rank.
Bloom, are you listening? Get those clicks, Mike. I think it'd be probably the EOE scenes would rank really low for me. They'd be pretty low, but I think in the grander scheme of a 2-hour episode, it actually, it played pretty well. You know, I do still subscribe to the idea that it would be, you know, the finality of a vote. Speaking of finality, that's the buzzword of the day. Surprised it's not bequeath yet. Mm-hmm. Finality first. I think that it would be my preference that Natalie is not even in contention for the game, but it was a compelling series of scenes in their own regard in the grander canvas of a 2-hour episode, where she put on a really strong face. We got to get some emotion out of that. We got to get her reflecting on her sister and the fate that she had in the game. But unless, you know, and even if Natalie is like an end game threat, or she's, you know, going to come back into the game through EOE, I just don't expect that we'll get much more story there. The game is so complicated with the fire tokens and everything, and the level of gameplay that people are clearly bringing to the season based on what we saw in the first episode is so high that I am expecting a very complicated episode on Wednesday night if they try to spend too much time on EOE. That's my biggest gripe about EOE. It's like not purity of the game. It's really just the TV product. Like, how's that translating to us?
So what I really would like to focus on this season with you is when we're talking about like finality and, you know, these characters that are coming back for maybe their last time. And we know they're not truly gone because they're on the edge of extinction. You know, I'd like to sort of like examine, you know, what that might mean in terms of Natalie. She's had such an interesting survivor career, especially now to add this new chapter onto it where Natalie and Nadia, they were able to bookend Survivor San Juan del Sur, where Natalie ends up winning and Nadia ends up being the first boot. And now it ends up sort of like flipped on its head where now Natalie comes back and she's the first boot. It's such a interesting survivor story for her.
I thought that Fishback's joke during Know It Alls really was underrated.
Don't worry, he tweeted it too.
I know he did tweet it too. Well, everyone missed it. It was a good joke. It would have killed in his people blog. It really would have. The same genetic code, is she competitive against Francesca, is funny.
But do you think, is that a possibility why people ended up, like, I know it ended up
voting
being,
for Natalie?
You know, yeah, do you think that that was sort of like the idea? Where Francesca ends up getting voted out twice, like, is that sort of like incepted in people's brains of like...
You know, I can imagine the universe where in his sales pitch to get the target off of himself and Denise, Adam could float that out there. Especially if he's leaning on the superfan thing. But I don't think that anybody else is like thinking at that level that would be involved in a vote like that. Certainly, like, not Jeremy is thinking about that because he's not included in any of that. So I can't imagine that anybody is thinking on that level except for maybe Adam. But I don't want to put that past Adam, who I thought scrambled his way out from underneath a fast closing boulder with great elegance. And delivering a very funny series of confessionals along the way. Loved Adam in this episode. So I you know, don't want to take that away, that possibility that, yeah, maybe he you know, noted the irony and baked that into his sales pitch, especially if he wants it to be part of his strategy, that people kind of underestimate him as just sort of like the nerdy historian. I think that the Francesca thing is funny, but I also think when you look at this like 10-season chunk of Survivor right now, the way that you know, Second Chance, the first all-star season of the 10 seasons begins, and the way that this one begins, I love that too. It's once again sort of like the story of big Survivor siblings having these sort of parallel paths, with Aris is a former champion, Vetus goes out first in Second Chance, Natalie's sister went out
first. That's interesting.
Natalie goes on to win, and now Natalie gets to know what it feels like for her sister. So I just think that there's some fun, and it's not like quite perfect circularity there. But as we're sort of assessing the narratives and how that's baked in. And also I think when you go back to the San Juan del Sur discourse, like the preseason stuff, or even like the early game, stuff when Nadia was voted out early, I'm not like a huge Amazing Race person by any stretch of the imagination, but in order to get prepped for it, I tried to watch a little bit of the 20s stuff. And it seemed like the general attitude from people who were really hip to TAR were you know, the general attitude was like, yeah, that's not a surprise that one of the 20s would go home very, very early. And what was a big surprise was Natalie playing quite as strategic a game as she ended up playing. I think that she's certainly capable of replicating it again, whether it's on this season, if she's able to get back in, maybe, or at some point down the line. That is harder to see now. Yeah, you know, especially now that we like talk it through, There does feel like this is like Survivor last chance for certain people. Mm-hmm. Maybe put Natalie Anderson in that category.
Yeah. And Natalie's win in Survivor San Juan del Sur was so much based around the idea of revenge. I need to get revenge for what they did to Jeremy. Now the shoe mm-hmm. is kind of on the other foot where
yeah.
now Jeremy's story, which I guess in San Juan del Sur was similar of that, like, this is what they did to Val, that those guys did this to Val, and he was out for blood in blood and water in Survivor San Juan del Sur. Now he's out for vengeance, and the thing that he has is that, you know, he does have this guardian angel who's on the edge of extinction, potentially sending him things when possible to potentially help him. And I think that one of the interesting things about the season, I know that you're out on the edge, but the way that it works this season, could it be an advantage, like we saw that for Tyson in the original Blood versus Water, of having your loved one, basically your partner in the game, your ride or die, out right. there on the edge, being your person who's sending you stuff throughout the, you know, course of the game? Could there be an advantage in that person also, you know, collecting the most fire tokens also, and potentially having the opportunity to send you advantages and be able to work with you from the edge of extinction?
Well, it's going to depend on like how quickly people catch on to that stuff, like that there's something wonky going on with the fire tokens. Like if everybody's trying to pool their resources together ahead of a challenge and Sandra's suddenly like, I don't know, I don't have one. Mm-hmm. And they're like, why don't you have one? She's like, I don't know. You know, that might get interesting. So how quickly do people catch on to the idea that this is how the tokens are being filtered into the game, is that they're coming through EOE and the bequeathment and like fully realizing the scope of what's going on there, I think will be fascinating. But the other piece is that like, assuming that there isn't some sort of mass riot and rage quit of the people on EOE, which I do not anticipate, mm-hmm. it's going to get pretty crowded over there. So at a certain point, you're going to, I think that like the advantage of having a loved one on Edge of Extinction isn't going to be so automatic. Like, I think, yeah, we've got Natalie for Jeremy and Amber for Rob on EOE right now, and there could be some kind of treasure hunt, scavenger hunt segment next week, or on Wednesday night, rather, coming up. But no guarantee of which of those two finds it. And then when you dump a whole bunch more people into the mix as the weeks start piling up, I don't know that it's going to be massively advantageous to have a loved one there. What would be great, and not that I wasn't already rooting for him as I'm rooting for so many of these people, because these are my family and friends and I love them all so dearly. What would be great is if this was sort of the beginning of Jeremy's revenge arc and Jeremy goes on to do it for Natalie.
Yeah.
It's going to be tremendously fun to watch. And then the arc there of Jeremy winning the first season of this 10-season chunk and of the Evolution of Strategy Volume 4 and then winning the final chapter of Evolution of Strategy Volume 4. This is going to sell a lot of chapters.
Right.
It'll be very good. We're going to sling some books. Go, Jeremy.
So, for Jeremy, I do wish that we would have seen more of his reaction. That, you know, I really looked for this again when I rewatched the episode over the weekend. And I wanted to see, you know, who was Jeremy mad at? What was Jeremy doing in the aftermath of the Tribal Council? We don't get any action from, you know, after Tribal Council. All we see is Jeremy then, you know, learning that that Natalie has bequeathed the fire token to him. So he's excited. I got a fire token. I got two of these. You know, I knew, you know, Natalie had my back. I wish we could have seen what Jeremy's reaction was to the blind side.
Yeah, I think that would have been good too. But there's only so much episode on the clock at that point, and what's right. going to happen over at DeKal is going to be so complicated that I think that like showing him receive the token and him saying, I'll do this for you, Natalie, has to satisfy that story beat mm-hmm. just because there's so many other masters deserve.
Yeah.
Oh no, here we go with Wiggler on his soapbox railing against the too many twists of it all. I won't do too much of that other than to say that I think that that's, you know, a reason why this stuff can be, it can be a yeah. lot. Cause there's just so much to track already, that the interpersonal dynamics are so plentiful that once you have to like, account for like who's got the what thing where, you know, there's just like some practicalities that need to be accomplished as well. So there may be like a really powerful scene on the editing room floor of Jeremy and Rob like really having it out or reaching some kind of understanding over the move. But whatever emotional outcome emerged from that conversation is satisfied by Jeremy saying, I'm going to do this for you, Nat, and maybe whatever other scenes we get in the future.
Yeah. Okay. I want to talk about Amber and the potential finality of the story of the woman who once came to Survivor named Amber Berkich, now known as Amber Mariano, and the potential end of her arc. We know she's on the edge of extinction now, and there is going to be more of her story that we're going to get to see here. But if this turns out to be it for the Survivor playing career of Amber, I think she's another fascinating figure to talk about. And for me, I really am very moved talking about, you know, Rob and Amber as somebody who like knew these people before they were married. Like, it really
these
is.
People crushed your dream.
I don't mean
that in like a, you know, I mean, it's pointed, but there's your history is baked into their history.
In the slightest of ways.
They are baked into your history. In an important way. And you went on to have different dreams that are in many ways made possible by what they did to you out there.
Yeah.
So to see them back out here, I can't, and it's not really something that I've heard you talk about a lot. I can't even imagine how surreal and pinch me that is. These are people that you shared a beach with. Mm-hmm. They are legendary within the Survivor lexicon for the game that they would go on to play the rest of that season that you were on. No matter what anyone tells you, Rob, you were on that season.
Mm-hmm.
And they are like that love story is synonymous with Survivor. Like they're people who don't even really watch the show, but they know about the season where Boss and Rob and Amber got married or whatever. Like they'll bastardize the story, but they'll get the heart of it. But you had a front row seat to that. And so to see the two of them out there, like that's going to be very personal to you.
Right. I knew both of them, you know, sort of well before we even got to go play. And I was there when, you know, they were first like starting the love story was really starting to begin. But then to fast forward to 17 years later, or however long it's been since that point in time, you know, it really is wild for me to see them together. And they just seem like they're the happiest couple. And I think that at the time that, you know, in my most like, pessimistic of moods, like, all right, yeah, right. This is going to last back in 2004. And I think that I was not alone in thinking this, that it really is remarkable that these two have, you know, stood the test of time. They have a wonderful family together. And in terms of, you know, you saw that scene in the episode where Amber was talking about like, yeah, I'm rooting for my team, but, you know, I'm also sad because I'm rooting for my husband's team. And just, you know, in being around them, that they love each other so much. Like it really is, you know, incredible to see this relationship that ended up forming out of this show. And, I can't wait to see how Rob is going to react to her being voted out in this next episode. I think there's, you know, so much drama and so much stakes, you know, built into this, that this is going to be, you know, really amazing to watch.
It's, you know, I'm not a huge reality TV guy. I'm a big Survivor guy. I'm not a big reality TV guy. So I'm going to make a grand statement that you will be better equipped to refute. But I think that this is like the epic love story of reality television.
Mm-hmm.
Is Rob and Amber. It feels that way to me anyway, where they met on a beach almost 20 years ago, and here they are again playing Survivor for the greatest prize in reality TV show history. Let's chug a glass of wine. So they're out here, the stakes are so high, and there is this feeling of, you know, and people are making their jokes about the passage of time on Boston Rob specifically, and and the ways in which like it's really fun/funny to see these players playing again, you know, basically two decades later. But I think one of the things that's kind of endearing about it is they are living embodiments of the investment so many people feel in Survivor, that this is a show that wasn't just a show for people. And when people take it personally, and when it is met painfully, or when it's met with so much reverie and just like feelings of pure elation, it's because this isn't just a show. This is like an entity that's changed lives. And you see it in the Rob and Amber story. You see it in the fact that they have four children. There's a kind of strange but very funny moment when Rob says somebody found something he's good at.
Yeah, I wasn't sure exactly what he was saying there.
Yeah, I had an idea, which is pretty funny. But there is this feeling that like they're our Ross and Rachel to an extent. Mm. You know, like they are
without ever going on a break.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, only just a break from our screens. But theirs is a love that rises above even Survivor. It even hits The Amazing Race, or it even mm-hmm. goes on its strange little solo wedding reality special. Yeah. But there is this feeling of the two of them kind of representing how far we've come. And as you've been pointing out a lot, as I know you're feeling really nostalgic about both Survivor and RHAP and just life in general right now. And I think that that's something that this is really triggering in a lot of us, which is why this is a really special time to be connected to the show in whatever way you're connected to it. If you've got a lot of history that feels like it's, you know, intertwined with the veins of Survivor, is that this is like, you know, marriages have like come up through Survivor fans, like look through the patrons and people who have found each other, and the great patron baby. And I was enjoying the photos of the great patron baby that existed out there from the Wednesday night event from the 10-year anniversary. That I think that Rob and Amber are the on-screen representation of a lot of those feelings. It's a shame that it's obviously a story that can continue because Amber's on edge of extinction. We're going to get Robert, unironically going to call him Robert. Boston Robert's reaction to losing Amber from the main game. We're going to see all of that. So that's going to continue to play out. But to have this moment come so early is probably disappointing to a lot of people, myself included. But I think with the names that were in the mix for who could potentially go at that vote, if you're going to take them at face value, that it was like Amber, Tyson, Kim, or even Tony's name at one point, I'm going to vote Amber out of that mix just about every day of the week.
Why? Why Amber?
Not even necessarily as a player, but purely in terms of like, there's just so many hard choices that you have to make with who you want to keep seeing on your screen, that of those four, if one must go, as John would say, I think I would send Amber to EOE. Especially because EOE exists and there are still ways for that story to continue on. And I thought that Amber was a fairly powerful reminder of the ways in which Survivor as a game has changed.
Yeah.
She's the winner of season 8 and Ethan is the winner of season 3. And so he's the one who's got like the title of like coming from the earliest season ever, but that's ignoring the fact that Amber survived 30 plus days in the Australian outback in season 2, all the way back in the day. So to lose the, you know, one of the most old school faces, one of the most unexpected faces to see out here on Winners at War this early on. And I think swallowed up in many regards because the pace of the game was just too much for her to match at this point, really strong for setting the tone of the season here with this 2-hour premiere. It was tragic, but it was great.
Yeah. If I'm Boston Rob, I just hope that Amber got to see the statue.
Apparently on press day, she probably did.
Probably did.
Yeah. I don't think that you can see it from Liberty Island, which is where Edge of Extinction is. But maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah. It'll be fun to see the Funhouse Mirror version of what would have happened had Lex and everybody done the thing they probably should have done. You know, and so to see Boston Rob have that now reaction of going to the challenge
think he's going to get bequeathed the fire token first. I think we're going to get that reaction when he opens his bag.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. And so, that's great, Rob, because like, what does he do there? Does he say like,
he'll be very emotional.
But is he going to come back to camp? I mean, like how is he going to like swallow that as he has to come back to camp and intermingle with everybody without revealing that he now has a second fire token is going to be, you know, potentially powerful TV.
Yeah. No, that's going to be, yeah, how does he hide that fact?
Right.
If that
right.
was, although, I think it was part of the, that did Jeff say in the opening that the person will bequeath it to you? Like, I think that he would probably.
Yeah, I mean, like, once everybody knows that Amber's gone,
yeah.
You know, I think, like, if they're all like, so, you got any extra of them fire tokens?
Yeah.
You know, like, pulling at their collars, I think it behooves him
yeah.
to reveal that he's been bequeathed this extra fire token.
Okay.
No reason to lie about.
And then, so from there, do we go to the next logical jumping off point of then, does Rob 100% blame Sandra for what happened? And is this, you know, the shot that turns the Cold War between Rob and Sandra into the, you know, boiling hot war? We are red hot. We have a hot war. We're in red. The hot war between Rob and Sandra.
Red hot right now. Yeah, God, I hope so. Oh, man. I really hope that both Rob and Sandra, and right now we've got reason to believe that they're going to be able to make it that far. I just hope that they can cross paths in the game and not on like edge of extinction. I hope that they're able to stay in positions of relative power long enough for their paths to cross and for us to get that war.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's a great, great arc. It's a really, really crazy thing that these two people sat on an island for, what was it, ultimately, 36 days?
Mm-hmm. 36 and, days!
You know? Yeah, oh, God. I hope so. I hope so. I think that the fallout of the Amber vote is going to be something that's going to be pretty wild to see, potentially. If it you know, bears out as a full-blown Rob versus Sandra war, that is going to be freaking iconic.
Okay.
Can't wait. Yeah.
Josh, is there anything else that is rattling around in your beautiful brain about the 2-hour premiere?
My brilliant brain.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that's rattling around? I mean, there's just so much. It's not even possible to like come even remotely close to telling you everything that I feel about this episode of TV. I talked about Tyson and what my big takeaway on Tyson was. That was really unnerving. To watch Tyson kind of in quiet panic mode, as it was for Kim. It was shocking and in the best way possible to watch Tony play as well as he did.
Can I go back to Tyson? Can I tell you how nervous that I was? So I saw the episode on Monday night. I watched the first hour and 45 minutes of this episode. They went to tribal council. I didn't find out who got voted out for 2 days. So,
mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah,
they held on to that.
They didn't show the second tribal council, so they showed up until the second tribal council, and I was super nervous for Tyson for 48 hours, and then I didn't get to see that until right before we went on the know-it-alls.
Yeah,
Amber ended up being voted out. If I had a guess, I would have said Amber, but I didn't know for sure.
Oh my God. Oh my God. This is like a very close friend of yours. You do a weekly show with him.
Yes.
That's so stressful.
I was very nervous.
Yeah. Every episode is going to be so stressful.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be so stressful.
Yeah.
And as somebody who's outspoken about dealing with anxiety on a regular basis, I can't wait to feel so anxious every Wednesday night.
I was like extremely nervous, you know, in the real time watching it of that first tribal council. And really, that's just the Natalie vote was such a blindside. I really was convinced that Adam was going to be the person who went home. And then,
same. I turned to my friend and I said, all right, say goodbye to Adam. And then Natalie went. And I was like, oh, what? And I had to rewatch the episode to like fully piece together the fact that like Natalie was like a serious risk and wasn't just being sort of like offhandedly mentioned.
I mean, I basically like had like my phone in my pocket. I'm like, all right, I got to call Adam when I get out of here. Oh, my God. And then it was like a relief. But then this is terrible.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah, non-stop whirlwind. I will say, so Tyson, I was so afraid for. Tony, I was surprisingly relaxed for. Like, even once Tony's name was brought up, it felt like that he was able to just like shrug that off so quickly. I'm so thrilled with how Tony is playing right now as a huge Tony fan. I hope that he is able to maintain this energy because I think it could carry him much further than we ever could have anticipated. So I'm really hoping he's able to pull that out. And to speak about Tyson and Tony together, one of my favorite moments from the premiere happens right away. It's after the 39 days, 20 people, one survivor, and we then jump back into the boat where all the men are being boated up to the shore, and you hear Tony from the boat letting out a Super Mario wail where he goes, "Wow!" And then you hear Tyson go, "Here we go, boys." And that's just like my favorite back-to-back sound clip in recent Survivor history is, "Wow! Here we go, boys." It's fantastic, and I've watched it probably 5,000 times as of this recording.
Yeah. I don't know what they do for an encore on Wednesday.
This is what I'm saying. I think you should just close it out at season 40. Just give us like 2 years to like catch our breath and then come back with a rebooted Survivor in 2 years is would be my vote. But man, if every week is as crazy as this week was, yeah, there's just so much to say. Ethan, I can't believe Ethan's back. It was so great to see Ethan in that moment where he says it's good to be back. I have to imagine like millions of people across the world are shouting at the screen, "It's good to have you back, Ethan."
Yeah.
With tears streaming down our faces. So much fun to watch Boston Rob do his Boston Rob thing against my man, Ben Driebergen, who I love as a human being and is one of my favorite people that I've met through Survivor. But it was so funny to see like the smoke coming out of Ben's ears as he's like, "I just got Boston robbed." It was horrible.
Yeah.
Yule. There's nothing else to say.
Okay. All right. Well, let's play a little bit of a game here that I have for you. God. And we have a new feature that we're having on the podcast this season that I meant to do it in this week in Survivor. And we just had so much going on that I forgot. But we have a new account. We have an RHA pollster. So it's RHA pollster, 1P. And we're going to be trying to use some surveying, some polling going on this season and ask the listeners how they're feeling about certain things that are going on. That we have a survey, we have it in the Patreon group, and we have a Twitter account, RHA pollster. And so we polled the audience, Josh, and we asked them to pick their top three players here. What three survivors were you most excited to see back watching the episode? There were 8 survivors that ended up in double digits here.
Wow.
From the poll. 100 people, more than 100 people surveyed. Top 8 answers on the board, Josh. How many do you think you could identify of the 8 players that were in double digits? In terms of percentage.
All right, I'm going to give this a shot. So I'm going to start with Yule because that's what seemingly triggered this conversation.
Actually the number one answer that over 52% of the people polled had Yule in that top three.
All right, important question here in terms of process. Was this poll conducted pre-premiere or post-premiere?
This was post-premiere.
Post-premiere, okay. So I'll say Yule, I'll say Ethan.
Okay. Ethan, yes. 36% of the people polled said Ethan.
Wow. I'll say Team TV, Tony Vlachos.
Yes. 20% said Tony.
That's
number 6.
I will say Parvati Shallow.
That was number 2.
Number 2.
Yeah.
Oh my God. All right. So let's be careful here as we're moving forward. I'm going to say Kim. Put Kim on the list. Yep. Okay, yes.
Number 5.
Okay.
23% of the people that took the survey said Kim.
All right. So now we're in territory where do I want to go with what I think the casuals would say? Would the fandom say it as well? He had such a big night. I have I have 2 dark horses that I'm going to go with the dark horses first. Let's go with Danny Boatwright. Is Danny Boatwright making double digits?
No. Not even in the top
five. Oh, God. No. All right. Sophie Clark.
Sophie, yeah. People are excited to see Sophie.
Yeah.
Number eight. Ed, she was Rob. Boston Rob.
Boston Rob and Tyson.
Tyson. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sandra and Denise had 9%. They were in single digits.
Yeah.
Rounded up the top 10.
I think because we'd seen Sandra play again relatively recently in Game Changers. We just had a season with Sandra. And although I thought that she was super fun in the premiere, Boston Rob playing Survivor again was a flashier deal of the two idols, I think. Although another moment that I loved was Sandra, the sit-out queen.
Mm-hmm.
Bench mode Sandra was incredible. You're looking fabulous!
Yes. It was great when Tony was looking at the other team. She said...
That's so good.
So funny.
By
the
way,
over 700 people had voted in the survey for the week one. Also, real quick, what one survivor most exceeded your expectations for them as a player in this episode? The winner is by a landslide. Do you know who it is?
By a landslide, most exceeded your expectations. I could imagine... do people have low expectations of Yule would be a surprise. I think people have low expectations of Tony coming into this season. Say Tony.
No, it was Yule. 43% of people said Yule exceeded their expectations.
What was great about Yule is, as he says, he's a dinosaur that's been time-bombed into the future, which, by the way, is a freaking comic book.
So with an iPhone or without an iPhone?
Probably with an iPhone, and it's probably a Facebook exclusive, so that's a little murky.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a Robert Kirkman comic book called Super Dinosaur. I think that the premise is a little different. There's like a Hollow Earth conceit. It's really neither here nor there. It's hollow. The thing that was great about Yule is that Yule Kwan just came back and was Yule Kwan. You know, it's like they beamed him back. Mm-hmm. They beamed him back onto the beach, and he's just playing like he... You know, it really is fun to like see Yule say like, so what do we do now? Like, do we all just like talk to each other and everyone's cool with the fact that like we got to scramble? Like, can we do this civilized? It was just so endearing. And the way that he was able to talk about everything and stir up the hornet's nest with the poker alliance thing, which thereby hangs a tail, and is very, very fun stuff to see that.
By the way, Josh Wiggler has been to Reno, everybody.
I have been to Reno.
Just have to put that out there.
I have been to Reno.
Sorry.
I did poorly in the poker tournament that I played in. So much I don't think Jason would want me back.
Josh Wiggler has watched Rounders also.
I have.
Rounders Howard.
I do know what a Teddy KGB is, and I love Oreos. So you may want to target me quickly on the season of Survivor that I was never going to be on anyway, but now definitely am never going to be invited to play. So I don't think that there's really any risk there. But watching him rally the forces against the perceived, amorphous poker alliance, and the way that he was able to really assemble the voting blocks in this episode was it was masterclass stuff. It was really, really
cool. And it should be no surprise. What strategic pair introduced in this episode do you expect to work together for the longest without turning on each other? Poverty and Yule Boston and Rob, Denise and Adam, or Sophie and Yule?
Oh, just going to stick with Yule. Yule and Sophie.
Yule and Sophie. 77%.
Yule's cleaning up.
The fans love Yule this week.
Amazing. And Sophie was amazing. Yeah. Sophie was
She's been overshadowed.
Great.
You know, she wanted a nerd shield.
Yeah.
And then, the nerd shield has come in and, like, sucked up all the fishies and then left nothing for Sophie.
But she got exactly what she wanted, right? I mean, like, but I think in addition to that, the way that she, like, popped in confessional and just on camera was, it shouldn't come as a surprise, but because her strategy very famously in South Pacific was to hide behind, you know, a pair of bigger goats, on her march to the end, that when I think, and she has said this, or I believe that she had said this in her pregame press, that like a lot of the conversation around Sophie's win tends to be framed around like Coach's loss or Ozzy's loss, and so Sophie herself maybe gets lost in the conversational shuffle to an extent. And I thought that she came out so strong in the episode as a narrator. It was so fun to have Sophie back on TV. And it's very easy to make the joke to flip it to a different person who I want to say this about. It's very easy to make the joke that Dani got more screen time in one episode of Winners at War than she got on her entire Victoria season
Not
of Guatemala.
True.
But I did feel like you got more personality from Danny in this episode, maybe even than you did get in Guatemala. And I was so impressed with what we got from her there. I mean, turn over a stone and name me a person from this episode that I was not just like completely blown away by in some way, shape, or form. There's maybe a couple of stones you could turn over, and I don't want to turn them over necessarily, but the amount of people that I was just delighted and tickled by far exceeds and outweighs the people that I was not. And even then, I think you would be able to find something that I would, thought that everybody did particularly well.
Okay.
Great episode of television.
Really, really so fun stuff.
So much fun.
Couldn't be more so excited right now in season 40.
Woke up the next morning, fired it up again at like 6 in the morning on Thursday with no reason to do that other than desire. Mm-hmm. That was the... what a gift. Such a gift.
Yeah.
So thrilled with this, right?
Okay. Now. We still have another big thing to do here today. So let's start to head to that part of the show. But before we get to that, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are our friends over at Joybird Furniture, which is perfect because Josh Wigler and I are experiencing so much joy right mm-hmm. now. And it's time mm-hmm. that your furniture can match your fearless style. Your furniture should suit your needs, but also feel uniquely you. That's where Joybird comes in, because Joybird is going to create the perfect furniture that suits your style. Nicole and I have a Elliot chair from Joybird, and we keep it in our bedroom so our kids
it's
can't
so
jump on it.
It's so funny because I have a Mr. Robot chair.
Yes, perfect. Perfect. And of course, it's one of our favorite pieces of furniture that we own. We keep it away from our kids where they can't go near it, and it's wonderful. With Joybird, your personal one-of-a-kind style should match your furniture. Bring your mood boards to life with hundreds of customizable pieces and over 50 fabric and leather options, 3 shades of wood, and over 250 unique silhouettes. Joybird offers a range of kid and pet-friendly upholstery options, Josh, so your creations can stand the test of time and the wrath of your furry friends and toddlers. Relax now, pay later with financing options. Your rates could be as low as 0 APR for 18 months, and they've got free personal design consultants to help you go from inspiration to creation. Each Joybird produced piece is made with the ultimate care and precision, using real wood without all those harmful chemicals and responsibly sourced materials. All Joybird handcrafted pieces come with a limited lifetime warranty. So sit on it, sleep on it, break it in. Whoa. If you don't love your Joybird, return it. Joybird stands by its quality and craftsmanship. If it's not everything you hope for and dream for, send it back. Free returns within 2 weeks of delivery. Create furniture that matches your own fearless style at joybird.com/Rob. See how Joybird can make your dream space a reality today at joybird.com/Rob. Go to joybird.com/Rob and receive an exclusive offer for 25% off your first order by using the code Rob. Josh, speaking of birds, did you happen to see any of the secret scenes this week?
You mean the secret scene in which Ethan baby birds Rice to Boston Rob or whatever it was? That I think Boston Rob was like, you should baby bird us.
Yeah. I would play the clip, but I don't even know if it would work because it is a visual thing. It's a visual thing, and Ethan apparently has the ability to regurgitate food after he's already eaten it.
On command?
Yeah. I've never seen this before, other than, like, you go to, like, a magic show, and, like, you know, the guy, like, swallows a light bulb and then is able to reproduce it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, it's a skill, clearly, what he's exhibiting here. Something that, you know, if he were not Ethan Zahn of Survivor and grassroots soccer fame, he would have a real alternate career in corporate events.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Ethan is ever able to smuggle the immunity idol into a tribal council.
Yeah, well, that's what Boston Rob says in the scene where he's like, Jeff, just 1 second.
Yeah, and the best part of that whole scene is Jeremy Collins' reaction.
Yeah. He's like really aggrieved by it. He's like, what is happening here?
He's really grossed out by that. Josh, do you have any secret talents like that?
Just play the song.
Stop right there. You want to know right now. Before you go any further, this is Wanda. And you're in my arena. If you need to, you can
and straight up leave here. It would make me so happy for the rest of my life if you'd shut the shirk up and just eat your damn rice. It's the one off. It's the one off forever. Now, if you need to, you can straight up leave here, but it'll make you so happy for the rest of your life if you turn the songs up and turn out to be nice. You wanna know right now, before you go any further, it's the one off. It'll be here forever.
A few more weeks.
Yeah.
We need to modify the song. I mean, forever, like, even if it didn't continue one more week, you know, it doesn't erase all the wand-offs we've cherished together.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's here forever. Yes. It's just your definition of forever requires some versatility.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, maybe then we could, like, modify the be here 40. That's
we'll
it.
We'll be here for just season 40 and then we're not doing it.
It'll be here 40 for sure. Yeah.
Listen, you know how I feel about week 40. So for the wand off to end on season 40, it's serendipitous. It's like we called it.
Yes. Okay.
But for those who maybe missed the announcement, who are A, surprised that we're doing the Wiggle Room at all without any explanation because we explained it in the preseason, we'll also be like, wait, this is it?
Yeah.
It's the end of the wand off?
I bet, you know, you're explaining it for the people who maybe missed it, but I think that probably because that there are a lot of people who are joining us for podcasts who maybe checked out of Survivor and are checking back in or are, you know, wanting to go deeper after a very exciting week of Survivor. Maybe there's some people that this is their first wand off and they don't know what's about to happen.
Well, to you, I say, I don't know exactly what it is.
I don't know if you're ready,
for.
To be honest.
Yeah. You know what? I don't know that I'm ready, and I'm being very candid here. You know, my throat is already a little hoarse from we've been talking for over an hour at this point, both on and off the record. And I feel like I've been doing my like shout screamy talk thing. So I'm about to go wild here,
yeah.
And I just don't know energetically what I've saved for this back half of the podcast.
Okay. Well, let me then set the stage a little bit about what's
please.
About to come. Because
I need to take a sip of water.
For the new listeners who are out there, the wand off is a idea which was started by Josh Wiggler back during the season 35, Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers. And what it turned out to be was where that Josh Wiggler used to, in the style of the Survivor legend Wanda Shirk, create original songs for Survivor, talking about the events of the episode. In that season, Josh Wiggler then challenged the listeners of the podcast to go tip-top toes with Wanda every week, and a phenomenon was born. And since that time, with some exception, that there has been a weekly song creation contest, a song parody contest of the listeners, and every week the listeners send in their songs to wiggleroom@robisawebsite.com, and they are then played for the audience with the top five songs in all of Wombat with the top five songs in all of Wombat Nation presented.
Yes.
Where the listeners will vote at robisawebsite.com/vote Wanda, the winner receiving a Wiggler's Wombat's hat. And this season that we have something also very special that we're doing. When Josh and I talked in the off season, I had said to Josh about, would you consider coming back for one last wand off, to come back for the wand off, for the final wand off, come back for the wand off to end the wand off. Josh also then said, okay, let's do it, but there should be some good created from this. And Josh had a wonderful idea of, could there be some way, in addition to the smiles that are on the faces of the listeners, could there be some good created from all of this, you know, kookiness that we get to celebrate with the wand off?
There's cookies? Why did you never tell me?
Yes.
No one told me there are cookies here.
It's a dilemma. I've had them stashed away in a corner, and I've been eating them, and I didn't tell you.
The whole time.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But yes, everything that Rob just said, and the solution that we came up with is these Wiggler's Wombats hats, which is just an orange font that says Wiggler's Wombats embroidered on a blue baseball cap. become a hot commodity, and there are many people who want the Wiggler's Wombat's hat, yet cannot sing or choose not to sing, or for whatever reason, have not found their way into a Wiggler's Wombat's victory here on the Wand Off. Is there a way to make those hats available? Is something that I have heard at least a lot over the years, and feels very strange to take people's money for that hat. That was my bachelor party hat that has since become something of a legendary relic here in the RHAP space. But it feels very good to take your money and then give it to a great org and to give it to a great organization that can do really good stuff with the money that you will pay for these hats. So we are putting the Wombat's hat on sale this season. The Wiggler's Wombat's hat is on sale. We have a quantity of 100 Wiggler's Wombat's hats available for purchase, and all proceeds will be going to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, which is an organization obviously very near and dear to my heart. And in addition to that, we've created 100 different hats, not 100 like different individual hats, but 100 of one hat. It's a new hat. It says Wombat Nation. It's got a picture of a wombat on it. Very, very cute. It's got a gray front and a black mesh back. It's a trucker hat, a different trucker hat than the trucker hats we've had in the past. It says Wombat Nation, and that is also for sale, with all proceeds going to the Australian Red Cross for relief for our friends in Australia that have been experiencing some difficulties with the wildfires and everything over the past several months. So two great causes that your money will go to if you want to buy a hat. 200 total hats available. I have no idea if this will not sell at all or if it will sell quickly, but they are available. And I feel very, very, very blessed that we have the opportunity to do some tangible good here at the start of a great Survivor season.
And so what we're doing is that both of the hats, that they both are going to cost $40, which is expensive for a hat, but
especially for that Wiggler's Wombat's hat. I mean, if you're paying $40 for it, you really want the authentic thing. But that's very touching. But yeah.
Because we're only going to be putting 100 hats on sale of each item, all of the proceeds from the hat sales are going to go to charity. So yes, the hats are expensive, but that's because that we are trying to have, you know, a decent sized donation go to charity.
There's the shipping costs, the production costs.
Yeah, the shipping is included. We just made it $40 flat. Wherever wherever you are in the world, we'll ship internationally, but it's just going to be then that's going to be from the total that we end up selling for, or you know, being able to put together for the charity. And then we'll keep you updated at the end of the season what we're able to raise. And so those two links are, if you go to robhasawebsite.com/wigglerswombats, and we will have these links in the description for the post of this podcast, that will take you to the link to buy the traditional Wiggler's Wombats hat. And if you go to robhasawebsite.com/wombatnation, that will take you to the link to buy the new Wombat Nation hat, which proceeds will go to the Australian Red Cross. Okay.
Very excited about that. Yes. You got that right. I think this is great. Makes me feel really good about coming back to the podcast. And I already felt great about getting the chance to talk to you every week, Rob, and getting to be back in the lives of so many people who mean so much to me for wanting to listen to me shout into a microphone and giddily squeal. Hashtag giddily squeal to your music. But the fact that we're able to all do this, and many of us will be able to come together and actually put some money in the pockets of people who can do real good with it, makes me very, very, very happy and feel very, very lucky. So really looking forward to all of that, and hopefully you are as well.
Okay. All right. So
with that said, we also, you know, winners of the Wand Off still get a Wiggler's Wombat's hat. Right? Like, that's how we do this. You win a Wand Off, you get a Wombat's hat.
Yes. And that's, yes, if you say, hey, well, that hat is very expensive. Well, then you know what? Win the Wand Off.
Roll the dice.
Win the Wand
Off. Take your shot. If it's too many fire tokens to spend on a Wiggler's Wombat's hat, which I understand, you can, there's the other way.
Right.
Classic way.
And if you don't have enough money to buy the hat, pool the money together with your friends.
For what?
Like the fire tokens.
Hat sweatshirt.
And then you can just share, and you wear it the stay, and you wear it the stay, and you wear it the stay.
Oh, that's so great. That's right. Really, really great.
There is one other part that we need to introduce to before we can get this wand off underway. And
should we before we do that, or do you want to do it during that? So there's a lot of people who won wand offs in season 39, which we were not able to complete the wand off for season 39. So there was no final wand off for season 39. I feel like it's only fair if the winners of the season 39 wand off are automatically, if they are bequeathed into the final wand off of season
40. I
think
you're using that word right.
I don't think I did either.
Yeah, that's fine.
Belaying them from season 39 over to season 40 final
one. Have you announced the prize for the final one, or is that TBD?
I figured it's just the jacket.
Again, just the jacket. Okay.
If there's a better idea.
I think it was an Applebee's gift card that we were also supposed to throw in there.
There's an Applebee's gift card that remains in the mix. You'll get an Applebee's gift card if you win the final wand off. You'll get a jacket, and maybe if there's something funny that shows up along the way. We can throw
and
that.
And you will
in
win
as
the
well.
Title of the final wand off champion. And the good news is we could do it the week after the season because that Josh Winkler does not have travel plans for
ever again
the week after Survivor.
Josh Winkler has been blacklisted.
Yes. Okay. That's good. And
see,
no Game of Thrones finale. So
right,
it's all
right,
the timing
right.
should be
right. Yeah.
Great. Right.
Yeah, it'll be good. It'll be good.
Okay. All right. Let's bring in the host of The Wand Off, the man who puts it all together and the man who, you know, it's easy for Josh and I because we just come in and we get to
we just laugh at
everything.
We look good.
But the man who makes the really tough calls and the man who, if your song didn't get into The Wand Off, the man who was really responsible for that, let's bring him in. The host of The Wand Off, Mr. Casey Kasem. Rob and Josh, it's a pleasure to be back here with you in the wand off, the final wand off here in season 40. Josh,
Casey, oh my God.
I was very disappointed in the opening of the season that Jeff Probst, when he was talking about all the things that were still around when people played, I was very disappointed that Jeff didn't say to Tony Vlachos, that the last time you played, Casey Kasem was still with his feet on the ground.
Oh, God. Yeah, so if you're new to the wand off of the ghost of Casey Kasem's here, he's here every week. Casey, how was your time off from the wand off? Do you feel recharged? Do you feel rejuvenated as we are embarking on one last tour here? The wand off farewell tour. Do you feel good? You feel great?
I feel great. I can't wait until you two jerks leave me alone for the rest of my eternity.
We should probably have a big exorcism of Casey Kasem segment in the final wand off. I think it's probably something that we could pull together.
If it's all the same with you, Josh, I'd rather not be exercised.
You are looking very trim, so I don't know that you need any exercise. It seems like you're taking care of that on your own.
Thank you. That I know there's a lot of talk online about what the survivors look like, and I
no
appreciate
body shaming Casey.
You not soul shaming me,
don't
Casey Kasem.
Don't ghost shame. That's not ghost. It's not ghost.
Josh, let's get to the wand off for season 40. And I can think of no better way to kick off the festivities than with this number from Brooklyn Zed.
It's astounding. 40 seasons. Extinction takes its toll. But tell Jeff, really, not for very much longer. The fans have got to keep control.
Yes.
Of course, that was from the film The Rocky Reed Horror Picture Show. Anthony!
That takes on new meaning now. He said that so loud. I think you probably summoned him.
Next up, it's been a minute since we've heard.
Did you ever tell Survivor Fiji's Anthony that you named your child after him, or is that too awkward to have that conversation?
Not yet. Okay. Next up is a man who it's been a minute since we've heard from on the Wandoff. Here comes Will from America with a quick recap of this week's show.
Denny's getting lost. Tony is a cop. Danny targets Rob. The word bequeath sure was said a lot. I wanna give you a fire token. My flame is gone and the tribe is spoken. I wanna give you a fire token. Can I trade it for a pop tart?
I'm not sure what a Pop-Tart is, but I'll be sure to ask a British professor if I run into one.
Oh, I've heard about that. I'm still behind. I've only watched a little bit of UK season one of The Circle, but I look forward to meeting the professor in my travels. Will from America, that was amazing, and consider this an official request for you every single week to do a quickie recap of the events of the given episode of season 40 to the tune Feliz Navidad would be greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. I think that could be the new glycerine, and that would be fantastic.
Next up, we've got another newcomer to the Wandoff. Here's Jeff Hume featuring Andy with some music that was specifically made with Josh Wiggler in mind.
We don't need no education.
Yes, Sandra, there you go.
These new gimmicks have to go.
Here's what you need to know about this season. We're introducing a new Survivor currency.
Giving Sandra a free advantage.
Tokens have value. You will each start the game with one fire token.
Fire tokens kind of blow. Hey, Jeff Probst, leave our game alone. All in all, you're supposed to be voted out and go home.
Natalie, Amber, Travis Bogan.
When your torch is snuffed, you drop your buff and go home.
Wow.
That was one from Pink Sharia Floyd.
Wow.
Your buff and go home. I think that's...
That's Redemption Island.
That's a Redemption Island thing.
Drop the buff in the fire. I should say, I'm not out on the fire tokens. I think that the fire tokens could be interesting. I will, if they bring them back, I certainly hope that it's, you know, without EOE. It sounds like it'll be without EOE. I think it could be very compelling. If they can find a way to do that all like very purely within the game, I'm reserving judgment to see how the fire tokens continue to play, but I did not hate it as of the premiere. Not my least favorite thing on the planet. It was not my least favorite thing that Survivor has ever done. My heart is open to the fire token.
Also, okay? big shout out to all the listeners for sending in zero submissions of we didn't start the fire tokens.
Yeah, we're still sick of we didn't start the fire. And, all that stuff happened and we still, that did not go away. It still feels very recent. So good restraint, everyone.
Josh, our next honorable mention is from one of our listeners, Cat B. And she, like many of the listeners, was especially excited to see one contestant return to Survivor.
Yule is back. Yule can see brand new layers of duplicity. Yule is back. Yule can tell that the poker players gel too well. Misfits rise, cool kids fall. all. Sophie's Nerd Shield will run it all. And to stay on the scene, Eula lines with gritty cops are us, and Sandra Safeguard saved the queen.
That was from the hit musical Darnell Hamilton.
Yes. Oh my God. So many great songs from Darnell Hamilton. Yeah, the gritty group. It's a name for an alliance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of them are
Tony, Sarah.
None of them are from Philadelphia that I know of.
wow, gritty reference.
I'm full of surprises.
Yeah. Yeah.
Full of surprises.
No King Cake Baby.
No. But Gritty's face is basically what my face looked like watching the Survivor premiere the entire time. Just like, my God.
You didn't beat up any kids, did you?
No. No touching.
Okay. All right. Speaking of kids, we have with us our youngest Wandoffer around. She's back, and she's excited about that same player who's back. Here is the amazing Maisie.
Yes.
Well, you felt like a dog.
A beautiful rendition from the artist Leonard Shield Cohen.
I just want to apologize to the amazing Maisie for what we've done to your brain. That we've put you in a universe where you are very wonderfully and earnestly singing the word Hallelujah into a microphone for a Survivor podcast. That's the kind of shenanigans that Rob and I have signed on for to do with our lives. This being the final wand off, I just hope that you're able to move past the Hallelujah of it all and just enjoy your life and have a great time because you're so talented and gifted. Hallelujah is hysterical and wonderful and so very niche here to the wand off. And I'm so glad that we're back. That was fantastic. The amazing Maisie, everybody.
Josh, it wouldn't be the wand off without getting some crackpot theories in the mix.
Oh, God.
Here
oh,
comes no. one from Patrick from Nashville.
Okay.
You watch Survivor for strategies that you've never seen before. Like voting blocks
and trust clusters.
And what happens in 9 with 4? But here's a fact, the last 3 first boots,
Daly, Barta,
had their last names,
Anderson,
as first in their tribe alphabetically.
Wait a sec, is Dr. Sean haunting Fiji?
ABC, the alphabet strategy, never thought I would ever see ABC back in season 40.
And did I mention that Amber is the first name in her tribe?
Going back to Borneo for strategy, ABC, that's how easy votes can be.
What?
It's come full circle.
Wait a minute. We think that people are voting out based on the alphabet strategy right now?
By last name.
Is Mariano the highest in the alphabet? Then what about Apostle or Tyson?
That was my first name.
But is Natalie in first position over on... There's Danny.
It goes by tribe. I didn't make the rules.
Can you write them out in English? So I can
maybe
read and
Patrick
follow
from
them?
Nashville can get you a transcript.
Patrick, write it up. Post those lyrics. We need to understand everything that is
happening. I believe that all of those names would be contained in the tribal Bible. Okay. It's like the Yellow Pages. That's how it works. Josh, next up, two Wandoff greats are back. Here is Kiri and Alex talking amazing about the unlikely duo that we saw form on the premiere of Winners at War.
Winter season, we're having a blast. Winter season, the game's moving fast. I found a girl, her name's Poverty. Found a boy, his hat has a bee. Survivor days, drifting away to the tribal nights.
Oh, Wanda, 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 oh.
Tell me, Pav, are you with me this time? Tell me, Rob, is this real or a lie?
Wanda, Wanda, Wanda.
Yes.
I've been thinking since we played last. You and me have a checkered past. We're the ones who know this game best. Forget those kids, we can outlast. Second day, we're on the same page, and we're ready for tribal night.
Wanda, Wanda, Wanda,
tell me, Puff, are we running this game? Tell me, Rob, aren't these players so late?
Of course, that was a duet by the famous Danny Boatwright Zuko and Sandra D as Twine.
As Twine. Do you even hear? It sounded like they got Coach playing trumpet in the background. One, two. Very good.
Very possible. Very possible.
Very it was cool because for all the obvious reasons that like it was very reminiscent of the Parvati and Russell stuff. So like, you know, history kind of like evolving in that sense. But that was even more punctuated to me. I don't know if you felt this way, but even just like the camera angle and like the setting of them walking through the jungle was so reminiscent of the ways that like Parvati and Russell would have like their walk and talks through the jungle, the way that would be filmed. It felt very much like that, like where Russell was just subbed out with Boston Rob in his place, which would probably infuriate Russell.
Just put Rob in my place.
Yeah. They can, apparently. This is great. It was great on that level. I thought that was awesome.
Josh, next up, we have a category of songs that we wanted to put together for you. I know you don't like a mashup.
No, we're in the final season of the Wandoff. Mashups are allowed. Do whatever you want. No judgment. Within reason.
This next batch of songs all have one theme in common. I present to you, here is Jordan from Vancouver, Michael J. Clark, and Swaggy J.
Hey, sometimes something beautiful happens. It's not being gifted, it's not getting willed, it's something else and it makes you want to sing.
I got bequeathed. And it felt so good. And this little fire token right inside my game. And I got bequeathed. And I'll never go back to say I'm getting willed or gifted anymore. Cause bequeathed is here.
No matter how hard you try. And since the first line side, it's a tragedy. That we lose naturally. Jeremy said that the booty is man of the steel.
The auto-tune.
But as you go to EOE, there's something he hopes you will leave.
Yes.
Will you be a queen? You're talking to me. Not to me. I'd be worried that you won the edge. I really do think you're strong enough now.
Amber, I love you with all my heart. If we find ourselves in times of trouble on the outs in our tribes, should there be a token, let's be queen. And if you're on the edge without me, please send me immunity. The word describing this action is bequeath. So let's bequeath. You and me will make some teas that say I heart bequeath. Because there's no way we'll make it if we don't bequeath.
That was a beautiful group of songs from the trio known as the Bequeathdles.
Yeah.
Jordan from Vancouver, Michael J. Clark, and Swaggy J.
That's great. Oh, man. The bequeath of it all, huh? You know? I really do feel like, you know, with this being the 40th season, the 20th anniversary, we missed the shot at doing what we did for Heroes versus Villains with the 20th season and the 10th anniversary of, you know, the revenge, the return, revenge, redemption, instead of outwit, out, play, out, last. I think we could have done befriend, betray, bequeath. Could have been good on a logo. We didn't do it. It's the latest idea that Jeff Probst, if you're listening, hashtag begin the bequeathment of bequeathston. That doesn't
is begin one of the words too also? Or no?
Yeah, good. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
And then before we get to the top five songs in Wombat's Nation this week, we've got one more mashup for you. It's the songs that were blatantly pandering to Josh Wiggler. Here we go.
I did my best to notice, but I can't tell the difference. And on the platform of Instagram, the right answer could be given. Sometimes I get nervous, just can't take it anymore. Close my eyes, grab my phone. Post a poll. Are these legs? Or are these hard times? My palms are sweaty. I just don't know. And I'm on my feet looking for the answer.
You all, everybody. You all, everybody. Calling out the poker people, showing what Facebook knows.
Yeah, there
she 40. Is. Can you believe they chose to run it with the OE? I really mind, it's not my kind. Jeff is making me wonder why. Josh the White Knight, Wombats Unite, complains on Twitter with strength and might. Wrote to Fallon, Sia and Perry, I'll never forget the burden you've carried. Do you even like me, Wiggler's King? Wiggler's King.
Those were Stephanie and Isabel Bourgeois, Charlie P, and Up Dog Jimmy.
Oh, man. What's up, dog? Oh, my gosh.
Ask Rupert.
What's up, hot dog? God, there's a lot to unpack there. The hot dogs versus legs, I'm just going to leave as a mystery. If you didn't understand the lyrics on my Instagram, where I am also at Round Howard, I don't tweet on Instagram because you can't do that, but I'll post cat pictures. I'll post pictures of my travels and adventures. Sometimes the occasional AMA. A Josh Wiggler hack is that you can slide into my DMs on Instagram and I'll very likely respond to you unless you're a creep, unless you say something weird or mean or offensive, in which case you'll get a quick block.
What happens the most? Weird or offensive?
I have not gotten a lot of either, and yeah. I hope that that does not start. I have found Instagram to be a really wonderful social media platform. So okay. And I know that's not the case for everybody, but for me, it's been a really positive experience.
Okay.
Occasionally I'll run a poll. I'll run polls on Instagram where I am at Round Howard, and the polls will often be very, the questions will vary. But the options are pretty stably, you could either vote legs or hot dogs, depending on the question.
Mm-hmm.
And I leave it to you to interpret what that means and how to vote. But I'm pretty clearly, I've got a pro-hot dog agenda.
Speaking of polls, you can't vote legs or hot dogs in the weekly Wandoff poll. Because Kurt Clark gets it every week, ready to go. At robhasawebsite.com/votewanda. That's where you can vote on the top five songs in all of Wombat's Nation. And while we're here, we have to give a shout out to top five human, Randy Neupel.
Yes, Randy!
Who's been listening to so many good and so many bad songs all weekend long.
I thought you were going to say he was listening in right now.
I wish.
Recording this. It was like, how's that possible? Technology evolutions, the advancements.
So top shout out yes. to Randy Neupel and to Jason Curtis Rivera, who makes the music videos to the top five Wandoffs of the week when he has time around his schoolwork.
Mm-hmm. And pretty close to being a top five human.
We prioritize his schoolwork over making videos for the Wandoff. Remember that, Jason.
Yes, Jason, that's much more important. Your education is what matters, especially as this is like a dying franchise. Like, you don't want to invest more into the Wandoff than you already have, because it's going away. So you should just want to be a professor, be a professor. You want to do whatever it is that you're studying, and you want to do good in school. You want to get the grades. You want a 4.0. If you can't get a 4.0, you want to get close. You want to get like a 3,
yeah,
a 3.5, if you can. If you can.
Yeah.
Make the Dean Kowalski's list as many times as you can.
Yes.
And then you get impressive grades and you graduate from college and you get a good job. You have a great future in video production, if that's what you want to do.
You know, one of the hosts of the show has to take his kids to see Sonic the Hedgehog movie tonight also.
Oh, I heard that. I'm aware. Sorry, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Forgot about that. Okay.
No, all right, with all due respect to whatever Jason Curtis Rivera does next. Okay.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay. Josh?
Expecting that Sonic review next week.
Yes. The top five Wombat songs in the nation are here, and I'm very excited for our first song this week to perhaps the greatest Wandoffers to never have a Wandoff hat, a Wiggler's Wombat hat bequeathed to them. Here is Aaron Robertson and Jordan Kalish.
Yeah!
With the first entry,
let's make miracles happen
in season 40 for Aaron Robertson and Jordan Kalish.
Aaron Robertson and Jordan Kalish, let's go.
I was golden, I saw Jeremy, designated 20 on my tribe. But Rob was out to get me, so was Parvati. I thought we were voting out Denise. Living on the edge. Now I'm a bequeather. Ream was right. Extinction is lame. Torch got snuffed. Ooh, and I'm a bequeather. At least I can get back in the game. Last year, my husband played in a poker game with his friends that he knew from TV. My tribe didn't like that. What did I do wrong? Hadn't played Survivor in so long. But living on the edge, now I'm a bequeather.
Oh, key change.
Ream was right. Extinction is lame. Now I'm a bequeather. Yeah. Now I'm a bequeather. fire tokens for days. Now I'm a bequeather.
That was a hit for the band. Smash Mouth play. Mouth with. Mouth laugh.
Wow. I'm regurgitating my food.
The old baby bird trick.
The baby bird.
Baby That's bird great. Is going to fly.
Classic baby bird move. Oh, man. And coaching the brass section again is very impressive.
Very impressive. The Safety Bunch. The number two song in Wombat's Nation this week comes when two legends of the Wandoff collaborate. Here's Adam B. and Bob with two B's.
Wow.
Talking about one of our favorite players who's back, who can do the baby bird trick.
A season of the very best. Cassandra, Tyson, Rob, Tony, Parvin, all the rest. Survivors now their job. And they've all traveled to the coast to boost their revenue. But there is one I love the most, the 40-something Jew.
That was the theme to Pokemonica Culpepper.
What's in it for Pokemonica? I'm doing it for Pokemonica. Oh, my God. Well, look, if Ash Ketchum can finally...
He could chewy gun.
I was going to say... If Ash Ketchum can finally win, didn't he win a Pokemon tournament recently? Ethan can do it. I want to see the anime intro version of that song. Jason, what I told you before about your studies, abandon them. Make me a cartoon of Ethan Zahn to the tune of Pokemon.
I believe Baby Bird is also one of the Pokemon characters. I think,
yeah, after they went outside the boundaries of the original 150, which, by the way, was total BS. It's capitalism. Fascist. Anyway. Sorry. We'll save that for when the Wiggle Room comes back rebranded as a full-on Pokemon podcast. Rob, you and I going through the evolution of the 150 original Pokemon. We'll get into that in greater detail.
The number three song in Wombat's Nation comes to us from the creator of Survivor Philadelphia. Here is Mr. Alex G.
Yes.
Now that you're voted out, give your tokens to me. Put them inside my jar. I said, shut up and just bequeath. That word is just so disgusting. I said, decided on bequeath. Literally any other word would have been fine. Will, give, donate. Like, come on in, guys. We were winners at the war. We met on Survivor San Juan del Sur. Help, we're targeted as we step on shore. I knew we were bound to work together. Bound to work together. We're paranoid. I don't know how it happened. I grabbed my torch and I ran. Now that you're voted out, tokens to Jeremy. I can't believe that she just bequeathed on national TV. Oh my God, that's so embarrassing. Again, decided on bequeath. I literally can't even say that anymore. It's too bad. 10-month-old, she's a new mommy. My discotheque, Juliet Parvati. Can I be the new Malcolm to your Denise? Oh, but they were bound to get together. Bound to get together. They took the map. They got lost even with it. Everyone here is a threat. Don't vote for me or Denise. Split Jared and Natalie. Or break up Boston Rob and his holy matrimony. No llama talk yet from Tony. But wait, you. I stand him and Sophie. Oh, how time flies. This is the final wand off. Come on, wombats. This is your last chance. Submit your songs. But keep your hands off the table. Make Josh Wiggler laugh instead.
Ha ha ha.
6 seasons. Countless wand offs. 1. Wombat. Now that you've voted out, give your tokens to me. Put them inside my jar. I said shut up and just bequeath. That word is just so disgusting. I said, ooh, ooh, decided on bequeath.
It was Jeff. Jeff decided on it for sure.
That was a hit from the artist Walk the Courtney Moon.
It is the most Probstian Survivor word we've gotten in a long time. And the relish with which he said, a bequeath. Like, oh, Jeff up to his old tricks. Do you even like the word bequeath? Jeff, I don't. I love it. I love it. I love it.
A drink before bequeath.
A drink before war. It's always a good idea. Oh, my God. Okay. What was that?
I don't know.
What was it?
I don't know.
It was brilliant. Terrifying. It's horrifying. Is that? What is that?
The number 4 song here in Wombat's Nation comes to us from another staple of the wand off. Here is Becky and Taylor.
Yeah.
And they're back to talk about their favorite player of the season.
It's season 40, survivor time. Who you rooting for?
Sandra Diaz twice.
3 times is better than twice. Who you want to win?
Sandra Diaz twice.
Ooh, child, look what we've been given. CBS just handed us a present. Jeff Probst opened up the heavens. Oh my, I spy a season full of legends. Tune in on Wednesday night. Survivor's back with Sandra Diaz twice. She may not have a chance, but she's gonna try. And if she's voted out, no need to cry. Cause she'll stay on our TV set. If she has to live on the edge. And if she pulls an Underwood, baby, how would you feel?
I would feel so good.
We'll all be just fine with the edge of extinction.
Even with this fun.
No!
That's not
the fun. All the shirts. You got a lot of competition, they'll be gunning for you. You got the talent to win it, but if you get screwed, I got an Outback steak I've been saving for you. You won the game 2 times, but you can do it 3 though, not just twice. Game changes did you wrong, you can make it right. Now go and take your 3rd crown out of spite. If you don't win, winners at war. The queen stays queen and that's for sure. And when they ask us, what we gonna tell?
Sandra Diaz twice.
I kneel down at my shrine. Who you gonna worship?
Sandra Diaz twice.
Royalty by design. Tell me who the queen.
Sandra Diaz twice.
Here's where we draw the line. There will never be another.
Sandra Diaz twice.
That was a great song by Lizzo Markham.
The robot. Oh, man. Where'd you get the no clip from? I've never said any word like that ever, every time I'm on a podcast. Hey, look, if Sandra goes to the edge of extinction and then she underwoods her way back in and wins, yeah, obviously, like, I'll fall on the sword and say, Jeff, I was wrong. Everything I've ever said is wrong.
The sword is Australian Survivor, Josh.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Y'all should be watching Australian Survivor, by the way. What a time. What a time. What a time. The time we're having. All right. Sorry. I know you're out.
It's a moment.
Yeah, yeah,
it's a moment.
Okay. It is. It's special stuff.
And now the fifth and final song this week here in the Wandoff, the number five song in Wombats Nation, comes to us from Corey B. And he talks about the plan to control perhaps the greatest one-time player in the history of the show.
Mm.
All right, everybody. Kim is in a secret poker alliance. You know what that means. Ice her out. Make her feel the isolation. Oh, sorry. Here we go.
No, she doesn't know what it's like to be stuck on the bottom of her tribe. So there's some isolation that we're gonna do. She'll wind up with the poker alliance. She won't bet on you.
That's just awkward.
So turn away from her when she draws near. Well, here she is, she's coming over here. She's in a high-stakes game with a losing hand. Until she needs to just announce her presence and fall down on the sand. So we got Ice Kim Spradlin in a bunch of alphabet. Taking out a soul survivor. Laughing like a little kid. Ice Kim Spradlin, cause it's just a fight. I mean, unless we switch the vote to Amber, which we're gonna try. Ice Kim Spradlin.
Why?
Ice Kim Spradlin.
Why?
No, I'm
not
saying nothing.
And that was from Elton Johnny Fairplay.
Wow. Oh, my God. Something, something Rocket Man. I don't remember. This is John Fincher, the rocket scientist man. That would work.
He was. He was.
He was. He was. He was.
Rocket wow. Hole.
Wow.
There you go. Wow, those were the top five songs that you can vote on this week here in the Wandoff. Go to robhasawebsite.com/votewanda. And of course, the patrons of Rob is a Podcast will get access to the entire Wandoff SoundCloud playlist. Over 45 songs submitted for week one of the Wandoff.
Coming in hot. Red hot.
We are red hot.
Red hot.
We're on fire. We're so hot. Josh Wiggler.
Tony.
We have,
oh, my God.
We have a bonus track. We have a bonus track here in the Wanda. We're so hot.
Yeah.
We're so hot. That is great. Josh, one last bonus track.
Oh, we actually do. Okay. I thought it was a bit.
And it's so good that it should be in the top five for this week. But
okay.
It wouldn't be fair for the Wandoff contestants if this was in the top five.
Okay.
Because it's the answer to this question.
Where is Dave?
Oh, he did it! He did it! He did it, Davey! You did it! I saw Davey say on Twitter he might do a Wandoff, and Davey did it! Yes! Play it, Davey!
This is not eligible to win a hat. But
I just got my first essential babe text of the season. I'm so joyous right now.
We present to you the Wandoff debut of Davey Rickenbacker and the player he is most excited to see back here in this season.
You! Soldier Quantelli. Y'all know what this is.
Whoa.
You Soldier Quan up on this show. Watch him crank and watch him go. Watch him crank that Soldier Quan and survive on this show. Now watch him crank that Soldier Quan. Crank that Soldier Quan. Crank that Soldier Quan. Crank that Soldier Quan. Soldier Quan up on this show. Watch him crank and watch him go. Watch him crank that Soldier Quan and survive on this show. Now watch him crank that Soldier Quan. Crank that Soldier Quan. Crank that Soldier Quan. Crank that Soldier Quan. You Quan is on this show. Watch him lean and watch him rock. Super soaked up. Oh, and watch him crank that poker spot. See the tribe, now watch me vote. Voting for y'all haters, man. When he do that Soldier Quan, he lean to the left and crank that thing like, I'm voting for you. And if we get to fighting, yeah, I'm voting for you. You catch me at your tribal council. Yes, I crank it every day. Tyson getting mad cause poker team is done, okay?
Soldier Quan up on this show. Watch him crank and watch him go. Watch him crank that Soldier Quan and survive on this show. Now watch him crank that Soldier Quan. Crank that Soldier Quan. Crank that Soldier Quan. Crank that Soldier Quan. Soldier Quan up on this show. Watch him crank and watch him go. Watch him crank that Soldier Quan and survive on this show. Now watch him crank that Soldier Quan. Crank that Soldier Quan. Crank that Soldier Quan. Crank that Soldier Quan.
That's my time, y'all. I just wanted to do a wand off, man. Cause I love the wand off. And I'm a fan too, you know. Shout out to my boy Jeremy, my boy Wendell, my boy Nick and Adam, man. Y'all doing your thing too. But you know who I had to shout out from one nerd to another?
Yes! Davey! Davey!
Like, oh, hold on, pump the brakes.
Davey! Oh my god.
That was Davey Rickenback
seriously
performing Sonya Boy. In all seriousness, that we're so excited to get a wand off from Davey. Didn't think it would be fair to put it in the top five, and then
the man gets a hat. Though.
The man gets a hat. We've already got the address. The hat is coming for Davey.
Staggering, fantastic. Astonishing. Davey, please remain. We'll have a special Davey segment. That was crazy. That was so good. That was so legitimately amazing and great and wonderful and awesome. And oh my God. Oh God. Oh God. That was, it's like the gif of Davey pouring the beer on his head and shaking his face around. I shouldn't do that.
Don't do that.
I can't do that, but maybe I'll get an O'Doul's.
Yeah, go for it. Go for it.
Wow. Drink before wand off.
It's always a good idea.
Always a good idea.
Oh, crazy. Crazy. I'm so happy we're doing this.
To cast
amazing.
Your vote for the top song of the week and the winner of a Wiggler's Wombat's hat valued at $40. Cast your vote at robazawebsite.com/vote. Wanda, you have until like Friday, I think.
Yeah.
We'll reveal the winner on next week's show. And of course, you can hear the entire 45 song track list at robhasawebsite.com/patron.
Oh, Casey, thank you.
Josh, it's an honor and a Jervis to be back here with you. Until next time, keep your feet on the ground. And keep your hands off the table.
They're up.
Oh,
they're
he's
up.
Gone. He's gone.
Whoa.
Wow, just like that. Just like that. Wow.
It is always a little jarring when he just kind of like disappears into thin air, like while you're looking at him. It's weird.
In fairness, he's not actually gone. He's just at the edge of extinction waiting until next week to come
Rob.
Back.
Rob. Do not trigger me. Oh, my God.
Oh my God.
Well, this is great. This is great. Final season of the Wand Off is already off to a great start. Red hot.
Okay. Red hot.
Let's just do that bit again, and then like Davey will come back with another surprise song.
With more songs.
Recycle it.
Josh, what do you have going on?
Oh my God. All right, well, we're doing this. Mm-hmm. I'm still working over at the Hollywood Reporter. Got tons of shows that are starting. The Westworld train is starting to rev up here pretty soon. So once Westworld comes back, I think March 15th, they'll have some preseason stuff on the Westworld beat plus regular coverage there. My series regular podcast is going to be going full tilt into Westworld mode. Some announcements about that in the not too distant future. So check out the THR. For all of your wigglery writing, and for podcasting aplenty over at the RHAP scripted wing of the establishment.
Post-show recaps.
If you're new, We podcast about, we cherry pick a few of the gems of scripted television from the vast orchard of scripted fruits hanging from the scripted trees. It's impossible to talk about everything, but we talk about the shows that we want to talk about. Great Jessica Lease, Mike Bloom, Antonio Mazzaro, Rob is there. Rob, you, me, and Akiva, we're podcasting about Curb Your Enthusiasm. We've sort of stumbled into weekly recaps of Curb Your Enthusiasm that are happening over at Post Show Recaps right now. Jess and Mike are podcasting every week about Star Trek Picard, who also would probably agree that a drink before war is always a good idea now that he's got his new life running a vineyard.
As long as Earl Grey tea hot.
He loves that Earl Grey tea hot. And Mike and I are podcasting about Lost, which may seem strange because Lost has been off the air for getting darn close to an actual 10 years. Mike and I have the Down the Hatch podcast where we are rewatching Lost, spending like 3 hours or so on every single episode of the show. We are currently in the early stages of season two. So we've got a long journey still ahead of us. Very fun podcast that we do over there. All on Post Show Recap, so you want to check all of that out. And then other than that, I'm at Round Howard, where you can find me on the Twitter, on Instagram. Those are really the only places you can find me right now. I'm also in the Facebook patron group. But those are my social media hidey holes at the moment. I'm nowhere else, so don't even try to summon me.
Okay. And again, the link for the Wombats hat, robiswebsite.com/wigglerswombats for the traditional Wombat hat, and robiswebsite.com/wombatnation. All of the proceeds from the sale of the hat will go to those charities that Josh mentioned earlier in the show. Of course, this is the 9th and final Survivor podcast of the week. Plenty of stuff for you to check out at robhasawebsite.com. That's where all of our Survivor content is. You can subscribe to our Survivor-only podcast feed and get everything that we did this week at robhasawebsite.com/Survivor Podcast, or for just Rob as a podcast proper, that's everything that's hosted by me. That's at robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. I had some really great interviews this week. If you haven't checked out my interview with Tina Wesson or my interview with Elaine Stott, had me rolling on the floor.
They were both great. So very great podcasts.
So funny. Yeah. Both really great shows and in different ways. Check those out up on the website. Next week on the podcast, another great week of shows that we'll have a regular Survivor Know-It-Alls. I've heard the feedback. People said, hey, that was too crazy. A regular Know-It-Alls. Fine. We heard you. And just for you guys, we're going to be back with a regular Know-It-Alls on Wednesday night. I am launching, Josh, the Survivor pregame show. That's a patron-only show. Going to be doing an hour of live calls before Survivor on Wednesday night. If you want to get access to that, robhasawebsite.com/patron. That is going to be a Survivor 40 only show. So we just started that for Survivor 40. And then, of course, on the show this week, we're going to talk with Jamal Shipman on Thursday. Very excited to talk with Jamal. Very interested to hear what he has to say the Winners at War.
Absolutely.
And then, Josh, on the feedback show this week, it's one of my favorites and yours. We're going to be talking with the Queen of Extinction Island.
Are you?
The Edge of Extinction. Yes. Reem, how do you feel about the Edge being back?
It's fine. You know what, dude? It's fine.
Yay. Talk with Reem this weekend. So excited.
What a dream.
Looking forward to that, of course.
Can we record a wand off that's just the words Reem Daily to the tune of Dream Daddy?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Robin Akivani, the podcast is back next week as well. So a ton of stuff coming up. But Josh, let me leave you with one last thing if anybody is still listening.
Oh, my God. I can't believe anyone is.
Yeah. Okay. Going to leave you with a special presentation. If you couldn't be more hyped up about the return of the wand off and the wiggle room this season, I will leave you with a special introduction to this season of the wand off from many of your favorite wand off legends. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
You better be ready. It's coming for you. The wand off is burning. And when this is through, one song will survive. It's coming for you.
I have a big reputation in the Wandoff, but looking around at my competition, I'm like, oh man! Fans of football wait all year for the Super Bowl at the end, and fans of the Wandoff have been waiting 3 years to see Wombats at War!
I haven't had an opportunity to be my melodical self at all in the past couple of months. I've been busy building a family with my wife, Shelly. But I'm like a wombat, rising from the ashes, ready to bring down the house.
I'm shocked to see Corey B. and Shelly. Corey B. and I have done multiple collaborations, and he never told me he was singing again. And so I definitely feel betrayed.
I almost got canceled after I made fun of Josh Wiggler's Wiggler wombat hats. It's a miracle that they still allow me to sing here today.
I met my fiance in the Wandoff. We have no daughters. It'd be really messed up if the Wombats had to see Will A. beat Jess East.
I was just a kid the first time I sang. Little did I know I was going to meet my fiancé, fall in love, and get engaged after the Philly Know-It-Alls. Now, I want to win the game. To come out here and win the final season of the Wandoff? And beat Will? That would be awesome!
Wombats ready? Go! They'll compete in epic song parody competitions. Face the return of Josh Wiggler.
Hey.
And encounter a new twist that will completely reset how the game is played.
The new Wombat hats add yet another layer of duplicity that did not exist before.
Wombats at War is underway!
Plus, they're playing for the biggest prize in reality show history. If being crowned the winner and earning a
Wiggler's Wombat's hat
in the process is not enough to inspire you...
Oh, they better dub in something over $2 million.
How about
two hats?
Okay, good.
Let the fireworks begin! It's the most anticipated Wandoff of all time. Who will have what it takes to outwrite, outsing, and outrecord all the rest, and be crowned the greatest Wombat of all time?
My competition here is the greatest of the greats.
Everybody out here had the best song at one time. Who doesn't want to sing with the best?
It's going to be a bloodbath.
It's going to be a war.
The Wandoff. Wombats at War. Premieres in February.
Oh my God.